Welcome to the Ontario AgCast. The Ontario AgCast can be heard on the Farm and Rural Ag Network, along with lots of other great podcasts. I'm your host, Wendell Shum, and I spend most of my time working with dairy and beef farmers. And one of my favorite things in the dairy industry today is robotics and technology. And our guest knows lots about that stuff. Robin Walsh is in farm management support with Grand River Robotics. Robin, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Wendell. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. You're bringing an energy to the show that some of our guests don't quite manage.
It's true. I'm hard to handle at times.
That's all right. Robin, you grew up here in Canada, but you grew up on Canada's far east coast.
It's true. I grew up on the most close to the most eastern point of North America in a town called Kilbride, now part of St. John's, Newfoundland.
St. John's. So for our people, our listeners that are geographically challenged, Newfoundland is about as far east as you can go in North America. Newfoundland is closer to Ireland than it is to Winnipeg. And I would take a shorter flight going to Florida than going to Newfoundland from Toronto.
Absolutely.
Okay. Tell us about growing up in Newfoundland.
Well, it's foggy, it's wet, but lots of fun. Despite what you may or may not have heard, we do milk cows in Newfoundland, not a lot. So I'm from a farm, Glenview Farms. We milk about 200 cows at home. It's a century-old farm. They've been doing it for, yeah, go ahead.
200 cows?
Yeah.
What do you feed them?
Corn silage that's grown under plastic mulch. We ship in a lot of our baled hay.
Whoa. For our listeners from Illinois, explain the corn silage, that you're growing corn in Newfoundland.
It's true. It's not very comparable to the corn in Illinois. Probably gets about half the yields they do there. But it's still great to grow on a small land base because you can still get a lot of biomass off it.
So to put it in perspective, how far north of Illinois is Newfoundland? It'd be like 6 hours north, more than 6 hours north maybe.
Yeah, probably. And the trickiest part about where we are in Newfoundland is that we're on the eastern point. So we get this weird weather from the north, from the Arctic, as well mixed with the stuff from the Gulf Stream. So we get really moist weather. So usually more so than the temperature, the moisture in the ground delays planting for probably a month and a half longer than you would say here in southwestern Ontario.
So they're going to be planting corn in Newfoundland in June.
That's the plan if everything goes well.
And then harvesting silage sort of end of October.
Yep, same idea.
Well, tell us about some of the other unique challenges of dairy farming in Newfoundland.
So in our situation, most of our farmland is not closely located to the farm. It's about a 20-minute drive in a car. And some of the...
Wait, a car?
In a car, yeah, in a car. Yeah, I haven't let go of that part. Sorry.
No, it's good. Newfoundland is fairly spread out. That's true for the milk truck has to drive a long way. You have to drive a long way for supplies. Feed, I assume, has to come from a long ways away.
So where we're located, we're pretty close to the capital. We're actually technically in the capital. So that's got some other challenges as well, as the city of St. John's is growing and developing. So there's a lot of housing and things going on, but there's also pockets of dairy cows out on the West Coast and central Newfoundland. So yeah, so those guys would have to get their milk shipped all into St. John's to be processed there. So yeah, a lot of driving. And everything that comes to Newfoundland has to come on a boat or flown in.
Right. There's no bridge from the mainland to Newfoundland.
Not yet.
So tell us about your farm.
So we're a pretty standard dairy herd of 200 animals. They raise all their own livestock. Pretty much a closed herd.
Been in the family for some generations.
Yeah, so we figure probably close to 150 years, I believe.
So you've been milking cows in Newfoundland longer than some communities have existed in Western Canada.
That's probably true.
And if there's any history buffs that care about accuracy, don't check that on me.
Don't come after us.
So who's running the farm at home today?
So my dad, Robert, my uncle David, and my aunt Denise are all owners of the farm. So they run the show at home, and they have quite a few hired hands. For a while, we were working with a lot of foreign labor, so people coming from originally India, Pakistan, traveled to Spain, worked there for a while, and then came to Newfoundland. I think the situation is pretty similar for a lot of the other dairy farms in Newfoundland right now because it's so hard to get labor. So what happened in Newfoundland is, I don't know if people know this or not, so we were under a little bit of an oil boom few years back. So people could get paid the same amount of money to work at a Tim Hortons as they could be paid to milk cows.
And it isn't as if there's a lot of young people staying in Newfoundland.
Yes. So that's the other situation. So even if you were to look at my high school graduating class, probably about a quarter or a third no longer lives in Newfoundland. So they've moved to whether it's other parts of Canada or even the United States.
Which is sort of what you did.
It is sort of what I did, Wendell. So I originally left Newfoundland to take a shot at the performing arts. So I went to the Randolph Academy for the Performing Arts in downtown Toronto.
Say it in your most
pretentious voice. Yep. Randolph Academy for the Performing Arts.
Perfect. I sense some drama from you.
No drama.
Okay. So you tried the theater thing and then somehow ended up at the University of Guelph.
It's true. So I graduated as a triple threat in 2008. And as some of you may or may not remember, in 2008, we had a huge recession. So one of the first things to get cut in a recession is the arts. Nobody cares about arts and culture when they have no money to spend on it. So then I looked at my options and they were either going to the University of Guelph because I thought maybe I could go back to maybe dairy nutrition, something along those lines. Or I was also offered an opportunity to potentially take over a dance school in Newfoundland.
Okay, you didn't choose that.
No, I didn't. I honestly truly missed cows and agriculture. And I think you need to get away from your home base to figure that out sometimes.
Good point. We hear that story a lot. People don't realize how much they care about farming and where they come from until they are away from it and they realize how much they miss it.
Yep.
So you go back to Guelph, get a Bachelor of Science.
I did, yeah.
From the University of Guelph. What are some of the highlights of your time at Guelph?
Oh, it was so cool to go to school with a bunch of people who had, for lack of a better term, shoveled shit at some point in their life. I had never had that experience growing up in, a more urban center. So that was really cool to go to school with a bunch of kids that liked farm animals and knew about soil and dirt and wanted to learn more about those things. So that was an awesome opportunity for me.
And then that fuels your interest and your passion being part of a community that talks about it and lives it every day.
Absolutely. The passion to feed people.
And so you come out of Guelph 2012-ish?
Yep.
And then right to your current job at Grand River Robotics?
Yeah, there was a little bit of a transition in between there. So several of my summers were spent at the Bayer Crop Science Research Farm just outside of Guelph. And I actually spent some time hunting down land with them for their neonic trials when that started. So that was kind of cool. But my heart knew I wanted to hang out with cows, and that's really what I wanted to do. So,
and by 2012, robotics for dairy farming had already become fairly established.
Yeah. And honestly, Wendell, when I started, I didn't know boo. I was a complete greener when it came to robotics. So I had a lot to learn.
And fortunately, most everybody was fairly new to robotics because it really has been evolving so fast. If you go back and look at it, the history of robotic milking is not very old. Even back 40 years ago into the 70s, it was a concept that was being tested, but there wasn't really being much done with it. Do you remember when the first robotic milker was at the University of Guelph?
I wouldn't remember that exactly, but I've heard some of the stories. But I know Lely had their first robots out and about approximately 20 years ago.
And Grand River Robotics is a farm equipment dealer specializing in Lely equipment.
Absolutely. So we will sell service and sell some other, I guess, support products that go well with robotic milking or robotic systems. So we do everything from helping with barn design, trying to get people figured out what they want to do there in terms of also planning for growth expansion, all the training that's required to transition into robotic milking, as well as getting you installed, started up, running, and, you know, trying to meet your herd goals through robotic milking.
For people that don't know the ins and outs, what's the difference between conventional milking in a milking parlor and milking with a milking robot?
So the biggest thing is the cow gets to choose when she comes to the robot. For example, in a tie stall situation, the farmer brings the milking equipment to the cow. In a parlor situation, the cows are brought into the milking area. But now in a robotic system, the cows can choose when they want to go to the robot.
If I'm a farmer, why would I potentially choose robotic milking over a conventional milking parlor?
I think there's a couple different reasons. Probably the biggest one we're seeing presently is labor. So just the reliability to have decent quality labor show up every day, even, you know, Saturday morning, Sunday morning.
Right, the robots never hung over on Sunday morning.
I mean, I'm never going to say it's going to be perfect every single day of the year, but it's going to probably be better than, I guess, what most people are finding for employees right now. And the other challenge is, I think there's a big lifestyle switch too. There's a lot of dairy farmers out there that want a lifestyle like a lot of their non-dairy farmer friends. So not being tied to two or three milkings a day can be a really huge switch, especially if you're considering expanding or having a young family.
So would you say that robotic milking makes more sense here in Canada with our smaller farms or in the US with some of the big dairies?
I think it's probably a split. I've seen success in both situations. And honestly, in the States, there seems to be a lot more larger herds. So where you see a lot of those 1,000, 2,000 cows, they're starting to make that switch. There's a herd out in Western Canada, Corners Pride, that they're putting in, I believe, 20-something robots in the near future. So we're seeing a lot of the larger herds making the switch as well. It can seem, I think, more daunting because they are sold in individual units. But the reality is you don't need to employ people to milk cows anymore. You're employing people for different quality of tasks.
On the one hand, the robots help a farmer who doesn't want to manage employees, so a small farm here in Canada. But on the other, in terms of expansion, the modular aspect of robotic milking makes sense where if you're going to expand by 60 cows at a time, then you would add one more milking robot to your system. And rule of thumb, one robot for every 55 or 60 cows.
Yes, roughly. And we usually say that depends a little bit on the quota. So for those in Canada, we know what that is. But for our southern counterparts, so that's in terms of 1 kilo of quota gives you 1 cow roughly.
Right. Thank you for bringing up
quota.
We were thinking we might have one podcast where we don't talk about supply management, but that's fine. We are talking about dairy in Canada. Lily doesn't just do milking robots.
It's true.
They take robotics to a whole new level. I'm going to throw out a product name, and you tell us a bit about it.
Okay, sure.
Okay, Luna.
Automatic cow brush.
And if anybody's interested, just go to YouTube and search some of these things, because it's pretty cool. Cows get addicted to the Luna cow brush. So, Luna. Juno?
It's a feed pusher, so it comes in two different sizes, so the Juno 100 and the Juno 150. Both designed to push the same amount of feed, but one's designed for a slightly more complicated layout of barn. Generally see increased dry matter intake with these, less feed sorting.
This is the product pitch now. Vector?
Vector is a brand new automated feed system. So mixes, loads itself, feeds cows every day, and is only the only system on the market right now that will sense the amount of feed at the feed bunk in front of the cow. So we're not saying we're going to feed these cows 6 times a day. We're saying that we want however many centimeters in front of that feed fence. So depending on that, so if cows are up and down the amount of intakes in that day, the vector will automatically adjust for that.
And this one is the one I've most been looking forward to hearing you describe, is the Lily Discovery.
So I think you're actually talking about the new Discovery Collector. Is that the one you're asking about? So the original Discovery is designed as a slat scraper. So to push manure down slats, it can come with water, keeps floors nice and clean. So I believe the one Wendell's referring to is kind of like, I call it the poop Roomba. So we'll actually vacuum manure.
Hashtag poop Roomba.
We'll vacuum manure off the floor of a solid floor barn. Right now, we are not selling it in Canada. It's being tested right now in a few herds in southwestern Ontario with some really fantastic results, but not even sure much more than that at this point.
What it demonstrates is it demonstrates that any job, any day-to-day mundane job that is normally done by a person can be done effectively and efficiently by a robot.
Absolutely.
And it's that kind of technology that's available that allows farmers to spend the time paying attention to the things and spending the time on things that are more critical to the success of the farm.
Yep, absolutely.
Where do you think this whole idea of robotics is going to take us?
I don't even want to fathom to guess. Everything will be controlled through computers. We'll get a sense of individual cows in a barn. It'll pick them out on a GPS system. There's systems that already do that. And then they'll probably even beam up cows like on Star Trek.
Well, okay. Since you brought up Star Trek, I do have to go back to the names again. Luna, Juno, Vector, Discovery. They're all very spacey.
It's true. And the names. Milking robot is the astronaut. So yeah, there's a theme going on there.
All right. Well, maybe somebody will go to the moon again. It won't be NASA. It might be Lely. The thing that people have to keep in mind, and when I talk to people about robotics and voluntary milking, which is the way that we're trying to present it to consumers, these technologies that we're putting in place do make life better for the farmer. They make things more efficient, but they're also better for the animal.
Absolutely. They're huge, huge, awesome impacts for the cows. So now a cow can spend her time doing what she wants to do. Lying down, ruminating, is when we know they make milk, eating, grooming herself, and just socializing in the herd.
And as we receive more and more pressure from consumer groups and processors in terms of how we're going to be allowed to farm, I think about the layer industry, mm-hmm. where the whole cage-free thing is going to happen because consumers are demanding it.
Yep.
And arguably, that's something that is going to make life worse for chickens. Robotics, if we looked at the situation in the same way, if we ever were forced to go away from tie stalls, forced to go away from milking parlors, we have robotics available and there's no quality of life downside for the animal to go to that.
I think there's huge benefits on both ends when it comes to robotic milking. I think even one of the neatest ones is especially with fresh animals. So there's a lot of like that 60 to 70, maybe 80, 90 cow farmer who would love to milk their cows three times a day, but because of labor or time constraints, just not able to. But now with a robotic system, they're able to milk those fresh cows more frequently, get those really awesome peaks, and get more milk out of their cows in a potentially same barn.
So the timing was right when you came out of school that this was hitting and becoming a big thing.
Magical, really.
Was that part of your decision to go back into agriculture? Tell us about why you would choose ag as a career.
I think I chose ag as a career because it's an awesome community of people. I grew my network infinitely through going to the University of Guelph, which was really awesome. And I think the opportunity to, you know, still go out, get my hands dirty, play with cows on a regular basis, and still work with farmers and create more food and quality food is really awesome.
And there's lots of jobs.
That's true, Wendell. There are a lot of jobs. I believe the stats are right now there's 4 jobs to every graduate right now.
Yeah, which I think would be a surprise to people that aren't in our industry.
Absolutely. I bug a lot of my non-farm friends or agricultural friends to really try and chase down a career in ag because it's such a fun and awesome world to be in.
Tell us about coming out of school and starting a career in ag as a young millennial woman.
Wendell, what do you mean? What are you implying here?
Tell us some stories.
I must say I've been pretty darn lucky. I thought that I would have a harder time convincing people to listen to me or take my suggestions seriously. There's only been a few situations that I've been asked why I'm not married yet, or perhaps I should go on a date with so-and-so's son. But then I reply, well, maybe I should ask my boyfriend first and see how he feels about that. So yeah, it's challenging some days. And one of my other favorite ones is I obviously have a family farm at home. I also have a male sibling. They automatically assume my brother is taking over the farm because why would a mm-hmm. female ever consider taking over a farm? That's a ridiculous concept.
Is your brother taking over the farm?
I don't think so. He lives in downtown Toronto and is pursuing a career in acting right now. So I'm going to say no.
So there definitely still is some bias in our industry.
Absolutely. I think you still see it in a lot of industries, but probably more strongly in agriculture because we are a more traditional field to be in, right? We spend more time in rural communities, so we get a lot more traditional concepts.
Now, being in robotics maybe means that you're dealing with people that are a little more forward-thinking. Is that fair?
I would definitely consider that, and I have thought about that myself as well. When I train farmers how to use the computer, software, all those things, they have nobody else to listen to except for me. So whether they like it or not, they have to deal with me.
Whether they like it or not. That's the pitch we always try and come up with for our salespeople too. Very good. Our industry needs to keep working on awareness of women's roles in ag, and you are an important part of the Ag Women's Network. Who is the Ag Women's Network?
So we are a group of individuals who are very passionate about cultivating, connecting leaders for a strong agricultural sector. I actually stole that from our website, Wendell.
Really? Because it didn't sound at all like you were reading that. Okay, so what's your role and what do you get out of the Ag Women's Network?
So I'm involved on the social media side of things, surprise, surprise. I work on the Facebook group in terms of finding great articles for sharing with our members, as well as looking after our Twitter and other Facebook account.
For someone who's a member of the Ag Women's Network, what are some of the activities that you guys do to promote women's role in ag?
So we have all kinds of different events and we're always open to new ideas. If anybody has some great ideas they would like to share with us, check us out at theagwomensnetwork.com. So most recently, we just had an event where it was a recreation of a farm forum, which used to happen through CBC Radio many, many, many years ago before we had television, all these things. And CBC would send out these packages in the mail and you would have discussions based on whatever was in the packages. So we had a very similar type event where we had different hosts in different areas throughout Ontario, both central and southwestern, which was pretty awesome. And we had discussions about community.
What were some of the questions? What were some of the topics?
Very loose, but they were very interesting discussion points. Like, what do you consider your community and how do you define your community? The importance of a community and a strong community and how can you help nurture that and grow it?
Would a woman answer that question different than a man?
I would think possibly. We were lucky enough to have male participants in my focus group that I was involved in. But yeah, so it was nice to have both sides of the table.
And I assume that the networking side of things has been pretty valuable for you as part of the Ag Women's Network.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it so much in terms of even just getting in touch with other people in the industry who are not necessarily involved in robotics or technology or the dairy sector. Hearing similar stories as to mine, to hear that you're not alone in some of those situations can just be a great relief. So in terms of highlighting when people have different achievements within our community of members, there's been so many instances of sharing, for example, Amy Matheson's story when she was on the cover of The Milk Producer. Just things like that where it really boosts the community and say, hey, we're more visible. People are hearing these stories.
And I think we definitely see that more and more, that there's just more women making decisions on farms and involved in leadership roles in agriculture just in general.
Absolutely. I think for a long time, women were neglected and they're even for individual women, they wouldn't consider themselves, you know, the COOs and the CEOs of the farm, but they really are. They're there to help keep the finances intact, whether they're either on the farm on a daily basis. We play huge roles and there's lots more women that day to day that are now actually running their own farm facilities, which is amazing. Musical theater coming out there.
All right. Okay. So musical theater. So this is something that you're still involved in.
It's true, Wendell. I am currently in rehearsals for a musical called The Drowsy Chaperone.
The Drowsy Chaperone. That sounds racy.
No, it's not at all. I know it's actually kind of it's a mockery of the musical. So based in the 1920s, and it's just kind of a big farce.
Yeah, much like this podcast, a big farce. Okay. Have you done a lot of plays?
I've done quite a few, both live theater and musical theater, and I still teach dance classes.
So you could teach anybody to dance?
Pretty much. I've seen it all.
Yeah. I'm not sure that you could teach me to dance.
I'm sure I could.
Well, tell us about some of the roles that you've had. What's your favorite role?
Oh, that one's hard. Right now, I play a servant and a monkey, which is probably my least favorite role. I'm not a big fan of playing a monkey on stage. This is going to sound ridiculous, but probably one of my favorite roles was playing a prostitute.
Okay.
There's been lots of other fun roles that are not, you know, as racy as Wendell would say.
Okay, well, everybody, it's good to have a hobby. And if your hobby is pretending to be a prostitute on stage, I guess that's fine.
It was for the musical Rent. It's a big story.
Right, and an important message. So
absolutely, yeah, huge.
That's the one time where that's appropriate.
I would agree.
And I'm sure your father was very proud.
He was. He shot. I was a little shaky that night. I'm not going to lie.
I would imagine that might be a little disconcerting. So when you go back home to Newfoundland to visit, what's your favorite thing to do?
I would say go check out the farm, see what's going on, hang out with my dad and the rest of the family and just get a feel of how things have been going for the past 6 to 8 months since I've been there again.
Yeah, about twice a year.
Yeah, know? Roughly between, you know, your annual summer visit or Christmas visit and weddings and funerals.
weddings and funerals, I know. So family gets together.
Right, it is.
Any particular food or drink that you miss?
Oh, the biggest thing would be, it's a guilty pleasure, but fish and chips, like deep fried.
Well, we have fish and chips here.
Wendell, you don't know what you're missing. I can't even do fish and chips here. It's just not even the same. And like, you know, if you can sit next to the ocean and get that salt spray at the same time, it's just a whole different experience.
It is pretty good. My favorite when I go to the East Coast are the lobster bakes.
Oh, yeah.
Is that a tourist thing or do natives do that as well?
Yes, there are lots of lobster boils, as we would call them in Newfoundland. It turns into a whole day event where there's a lot of barley beverages consumed as well, usually on someone's back deck if the weather's well enough, and you hang out and socialize all day and eventually eat lobster.
Sounds like a good time to me. In Newfoundland, are Newfie jokes just jokes?
Yeah, I think so, for the most part.
Do you have a favorite Newfie joke?
It might not be for word what it is, but roughly goes along the lines of there is a Newfie driving along the road in the prairies, and he sees a gentleman out in a canoe in a wheat field paddling. So he's mad and flipping out. So he decides to get out of his car, stands on the edge of the wheat field. He's like, "You son of a... If I had my rubber boots on, I'd come in there and beat you because you're giving Newfies a bad name." So okay. That's my ag Newfie joke.
Well, I don't know where we can really go from here. We've covered some important topics. I think having you working with us and the whole industry of robotics, I think is good for dairy, and I'm excited about where this is all going to go.
Me too. It's been fun, Wendell.
Thank you for joining us. This has been the Ontario AgCast. Please go back to Twitter, give us a retweet, give us a rating on iTunes. It helps us grow the audience. Don't forget to check out the Farm and Rural Ag Network. If this is the last podcast we ever do, it's been fun. If not, we'll see you next time.